flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks to our buddy Jason Longshore here at the Atlanta United Training Grounds. Guys, it's Dukes and Bell. We do have some Braves news, and we want to get our Grant McCauley on, our buddy who covers the Braves for us, Braves insider, about this news, because we've been waiting for some signings and some things to happen with this Braves team. And so, Grant, as you jump on with this, and we appreciate you taking a few minutes, tell us about this signing with Profar. What's it mean for the Braves, the outfield, and do you like the signing? Let's start there.
Yeah, absolutely. I do like the signing, and I feel like it checks a lot of boxes for the Braves. And I didn't think that we'd be sitting around waiting till, you know, less than 3 weeks for spring training to start, and the Braves hadn't really done anything to address their needs. So this was a big one. There's no two ways about that. It's a multi-year deal, so somebody that can fit in the Braves outfield for a while, give you some stability, and hopefully coming off a career year can give you the kind of offense that you put up a season ago and be part of a Braves ensemble in that offense that does a lot of things that just flat out didn't happen in 2024. So you get some offensive upside, an all-star left fielder, which you can put with your up-and-coming future superstar center fielder who's certainly shown himself to be quite the player. And by the way, you get the National League's MVP from 2023 back before too long in the season, it sounds like. That's going to be a pretty nice outfield, and it could be a pretty nice outfield for a minute. And even if you're not starting Jared Kelnick, you can do a lot worse for fourth outfielders who can play all three spots. So, as I said on formerly known as Twitter, now I guess called X, this is a pretty good quartet for the Braves. I do think it's a good fit, and from a money standpoint, I think this maybe underscores the waiting is very difficult, but when you find the right deal, it's worth it.
It's our man Grant McCauley with us on the WaitForIt.com hotline as we hear about the deal. The deal, if he rakes, is a steal. But I was just debating with Carl during the commercial break. He's a career 245 hitter. He's bounced around. Obviously, he had traction last year, surrounded by a great lineup in San Diego. Do you see him having success here in Atlanta like that?
I do, because of the outfield, or excuse me, not the outfield, but the lineup that he's going to be a part of. I mean, yeah, we just talked about three potent bats in the outfield, with Profar being one of them. But then you throw in, you've got a DH in Marcell Ozuna, who's going to be a powerful bat that could protect Profar in that lineup. You've got Austin Riley, you've got Matt Olson, you've got Ozzie Albies, you've got Sean Murphy, who could certainly use a bounce-back year. At this point, I think that you start to look at all of that and say, this is a talented group that was missing some pieces, and Profar could be that missing piece. So, yeah, I do really like the fit, and I do feel like he is capable and talented enough to do the kinds of things he did last year. I mean, we talk about waiting. Jurickson Profar in 2011-2012 was the number one prospect in baseball, hands down, with the Texas Rangers. It just didn't work out there. It took a long time for him to really stick and stay in the majors. So what he's been able to do is he's gotten into his late 20s, early 30s. I feel like he's capable of replicating that. And again, you're not asking him to come in and carry the whole load for the Braves. They've got a very good lineup all around. And to throw out one more thing, when a guy like Michael Conforto is getting $17-plus million a year from a team like the Dodgers that doesn't mind spending, I still like the value that you're getting here, even if you gave multiple years to Profar, because I think he could fit for a while.
From Curacao, like Andrew Jones, not to be a Weisenheimer, Grant, why didn't he get signed sooner?
I don't know. That, I think, is probably part of the market and just the way that teams are maybe prioritizing players. And when you're looking for multi-year deals, sometimes it takes a while to wait to find the right one. Other times, certain areas of need, like typically starting pitching, you'll start to see some big multi-year deals like that go out pretty quick. But with outfielders, it always seems like, whether it is a Michael Conforto or a Jock Peterson or some of these other guys that are willing to sign 1- and 2-year deals or 1-year deals with an option, that sometimes clubs are just happy to go ahead and plug that hole temporarily and maybe wait and see. And I think Profar was probably one of those players that, to your point, I mean, he's not a year-over-year superstar, a very nice player, but maybe some teams were looking at it and say, okay, maybe I need to see it for one more year to really trust it. But I think that there are a lot of clubs out there that at this price would be very happy to have Jurickson Profar. The Braves just happen to be the team that got the deal done.
The financials, talk about that a little bit. You know, the Braves never really locked themselves into a long financial deal. It is rare. I mean, the Austin Riley deal, highest paid guy, you know, $200 million. But this is substantial, I think more substantial than we thought it would be. How does it break down, Grant?
Yeah, because it's the free agent side of things, right? I mean, the Braves are not known for going out and signing players outside of the organization. They're known for extending the homegrown talent they've got in it. The only real exception I can say that got a bigger deal beyond this was you signed Marcell Ozuna for 1 year in 2020, then you re-upped him for his multi-year contract that he's still on, obviously, at this point. That's pretty much the most money, the biggest and most notable money the Braves have spent in free agency slash an extension for a player who did not grow up in the Braves organization. So that is, I don't know that it necessarily is a sign of many things to come with that, but I think that in some cases and in some places here at this point where the Braves are as they're currently assembled, they needed to start looking outside the organization and signing a free agent to fill some of these voids. And this was the kind of move that I think many people have been waiting to see. Will they pay a free agent? They've gotten a lot done in trades. There's no two ways about that. They've grown some incredible superstars that are all under contract, but I think, and I don't know if this answers the question, this was one of the ways we just kind of wondered if they were going to fill a need, and they've shown that they will.
Jurickson Profar, guys, had a great year with San Diego. Signs a 3-year, $42 million deal with the Braves to plug in, presumably in left field. And eventually, Ronald Acuña comes back to right. In the meantime, you'll get a chance to start until Ronald's 100%. So Grant's on the phone to talk about it. What about the bullpen? We had Pierce Johnson on yesterday. I was joking around with him. I said, sounds to me like Uncle Jesse will come back for like pennies on the dollar. Where are we going to find some help with this pen?
Yeah, I feel like the bullpen, and Alex Anthopoulos is going to speak to the media in a couple of hours, and this is something that I will certainly ask about if somebody doesn't get to it first, but where are these other needs for the Braves? And really, I'm kind of curious, and I know you guys have talked to Alex this winter as well, you know, is this a year in which maybe the needs are, and the pursuit of those needs are a little bit more amped up than they've been in years past, especially with the time that you've waited and needing to get it done really before opening day? I mean, we can look at spring training all we want, but as long as you got that roster put together before you have to go and play actual games that matter, I think you kind of give yourself that latitude. But the bullpen is one of those areas where I think you can throw some quantity and quality at that. And they've got some guys that obviously Raisel Iglesias is the one that you're going to turn to in the ninth inning. Pierce Johnson is a capable setup man, but losing A.J. Minter, losing Joe Jimenez for the season quite possibly with that knee injury that he was dealing with that apparently was worse than anybody knew last year when he went to get it fixed afterwards, those are two big losses. But I do see a lot of upside in Dylan Lee, who was a great left-hander for the Braves last year, and you've got Aaron Bummer, who can kind of, I think, slot in as that secondary lefty if I'm the one who's lining those up. And I think a name that's getting forgotten right now is Daisbell Hernandez, who's somebody the Braves have really seen a lot in the last couple of years. High-octane arm. Really, I just think needs the opportunity to prove himself. He's done everything he can with the chances that he's gotten thus far, but that could be another answer internally. But I would not be surprised to see one, two, maybe more veteran bullpen guys who are looking for someplace to pitch that haven't gotten a contract by the time spring training gets rolling that could find themselves in a Braves uniform sometime in the month of February, month of March.
Where do you hit him in the lineup, Grant?
That's an interesting question because I guess we've got the pre-Ronald Acuña Jr. lineup and the post-Ronald Acuña Jr. lineup. True. I would lead off with Michael Harris, that's for sure. I think Profar, honestly, could hit second. He could hit in the middle of the lineup. He could hit a little bit lower if you wanted him to. I think he'd be a nice second-place hitter in the order. Then you've got Austin Riley, you've got Matt Olson, you've got Marcell Ozuna. We all know the rest of that lineup. But when Ronald comes back, that will be the interesting thing because I was kind of looking at this last year. I think we're having this conversation probably about a year ago. Is Michael Harris eventually going to get installed in that number two spot of the order? Because that's where I think he belongs and where he profiles long-term. So the signing of Profar shouldn't really change all of that, but it's fascinating when you can finally start talking about having all the pieces on the board and being able to deploy a lineup that's, you know, a lot more like what you imagined and not quite the scotch tape version that the Braves had last year, trying to get nine guys out on the field and put together a competitive lineup and some competitive at-bats. This is a nice signing from a depth perspective. It just makes the Braves better.
Do we know anything? I know we joked around a few weeks ago about Acuna video of him viral hitting batting practice down in the Dominican, somewhere in the Caribbean, as Bob Feller would say. But what are expectations, just because we got John now talking about Braves moving with Jurickson Profar, about both the timeline for Acuna, and is that something Alex will address, or Alex is going to keep it vague about him and Strider?
I'm sure he's going to get asked about it again. I don't think that the timeline is really going to have come into focus because, again, they haven't gotten to spring training. They haven't really gotten to put him through the paces and see where he is and obviously give him the opportunity to play some games down there. But if I had to guess, based on the indications we've gotten from talking to Alex and just the level to which Ronald Acuna Jr. is expected to be back, I would expect him to return sometime, maybe in the middle of May. If he gets back any sooner, that's great, but that's kind of where I would eyeball the return of Ronald Acuna Jr. So 5-6 weeks, you know, with an outfield that doesn't include him, a lineup that doesn't include him, but the sooner you get him back, the better, but they're not going to rush it.
We hadn't had a chance to talk to you in a minute, Grant. What the Dodgers are doing, it's just, it feels almost criminal. I mean, look, I get to the victor goes the spoils. They got TV money. They got everything going their way. And I know that, you know, Bob Costas, we've debated over the years, would they ever come up with a salary cap? This union's just too strong for that. But I know we have this luxury tax, but it seems like it's a speed bump to L.A.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head about the union and the role that it plays on salary caps and that kind of stuff. And there's going to be a collective bargaining agreement here in the next, what, couple of years, that may be the biggest and most contentious in the history of the sport, to where people are already talking about, would you sacrifice a season if you got a salary cap? I mean, we don't have enough time on this call for me to address that other than to say sacrificing a season is, to me, not a route anybody wants to take. It's not in the best interest of the sport. But to make a very long story short, I think some of the discrepancy can't, or the blame for what we're seeing can't just go on L.A. for being the team willing to spend. Some of this has to be pointed out that the Marlins, the Athletics, and other clubs are not, and Pirates, are not taking the $70 million a year they're getting to help make them more competitive and pouring it into on-the-field talent. They're just using it to turn a profit as a good business model. And unless or until you can find a way, I think, to police that a little bit better or to, you know, make these other owners spend more, which they should. They're all capable of doing it. L.A., as I've said, is operating on a level that nobody has ever before. Who knows what this deferred money is going to do to them ultimately? Maybe they just absorb it as the cost of doing business. Not everybody's comfortable with doing that. But there are a lot of teams with a lot of payrolls that are much lower than they could be if those owners actually wanted to go out there and get competitive and play in that space. But I think there's just a lot of reasons they've talked themselves out of it over the years, and that's the problem that baseball's facing.
Great stuff, Grant. Appreciate you jumping on, man. Breaking news for the Braves today as they signed outfielder Jurickson Profar. And he is a guy that comes over from San Diego, had a great year last year for those who are not familiar with him. I like the signing. I think it gives us some versatility and some pop. I'm curious. This may be, again, guys, we may be talking about this, Grant, as one of those sneaky double-A moves where you go, oh, what's he going to do when he comes in and produces, you know?
Right.
Yep. It definitely could be. I mean, stranger things have happened, most certainly. But a little bit of work left to do, and we'll see what Alex Anthopoulos has up his sleeve as the Braves report to spring training and have their first workout on February the 12th. That's right around the corner.
Wow. Good stuff. All right, buddy. We'll talk soon. Thank you again.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We needed to get that on because a lot of Braves fans have been saying, what is the deal? When are we going to do something? You do a little bit of something today. It's not, again, the end-all of end-alls. We're going to come back, Mike. We have some news in the NFL, a turn, a twist that has happened now we need to talk about. And also our man Sean Merriman is going to join us here a little bit after the bottom of the hour. Stay there. We'll talk NFC, AFC championship games as well. There are lots of NFL news and notes going on. We'll fill you in just a sec. We've been here all day at Atlanta United's training grounds. A big shout out to Brad Guzan. Also, Ronnie Dyla, a new manager, Mike, and a lot of people commenting on his interview with us that happened at 5:20. You can rewind on the app, the Odyssey app, and go back and check that out. Again, a guy that's, you know, Norwegian, from Norway, Mike, played overseas, has been all over the place, but comes in with the plan.
Right, and he won a championship just a couple years ago with NYCFC, so he gets, see, that's the thing, coming in, know the MLS game.
Big time.
So he gets it, and even though we got two big holes to fill on the roster, that's designated players, big money guys, and nobody can comment on dudes that are on contract to other teams, no matter where they are in the world.
Right.
But if Miguel Almiron and some of the other names linked to this team come down, basically after what we heard from Jason Longshore, our soccer expert, you hear him on Mike Conti with the call on play-by-play, just seems like it really could be an exciting style, which went over a lot of fans, and maybe get some of that juice back that we caught at the end of last year, and we want to get back to, of course, the 17, 18, and 19 years.
And then the other thing we're talking about, and we just got off the line with our buddy Grant McCauley, the Braves sign, and again, I thought just from a term standpoint, it's a little bit more significant than what we thought, but Jurickson Profar signs from the Padres. He's actually a free agent, but signs with the Braves, Mike. An outfield need. And if you're going, okay, what's this mean? It doesn't mean anything, guys. Acuna's going to come back. Harris is back. You've got some pieces. Kelnick is in place. But you needed some versatility and some additional pop and some insurance.
Right. And when it first dropped, I put up on Twitter. It's really cool when you have that Twitter feature where you can edit the first hour. Well, he can platoon with Kelnick. He goes, oh, he's not just coming to platoon. No, he's a 245 hitter for his career. I mean, if he continues to pop like that, then yes, he is your everyday outfielder and most likely left field when Ronald comes back. And let's hope that's the case. But, you know, as Grant kind of explained, kind of like Kelnick, who eventually popped, he didn't start hopping until he was like 30, 31, because Kelnick was also a top draft pick. But this guy was considered, as Grant explained, one of the top prospects in baseball. He'll be 32 next month. Or later in February, I should say, Carl. So, yeah, it seems like another double-A potential steal at 3 years for $42 million.
No doubt. All right, let's talk about what's going on around the NFL. Sean Merriman's going to stop by the show here before we get out of here at 7 to talk some AFC-NFC championship game. As we start to break things down tomorrow, we'll give you our picks. We also have a bunch of guests that are going to stop by on a big Friday show. So here's the twist and turn. So the Jags had Trent Baalke as their general manager the beginning of the week. They should have fired him when they decided to fire Doug Peterson.
Yeah, so 3 weeks ago, fire him. Season's over, fire him.
They didn't. They stayed the course and said, he's going to continue to be our general manager. So now they've been interviewing and going through this process of trying to figure out who their next coach is going to be. Well, Liam Cohen, who's the offensive coordinator for the Buccaneers, was one of the guys that was high on their list. And rumor got out, Mike, that he was like, can't work under these situations. And he wasn't the only one. Ben Johnson also said, I am not comfortable working under these circumstances.
Right, you've got a $55 million quarterback in sunshine, Trevor Lawrence, and you can't fix it. You got to get the best offensive mind in town. So they lost out on Ben Johnson. We joked around because Shad Khan, he's made a lot of bad decisions. Number one is that mustache. Secondly is with him basically going on TV and asked the question by local media, hey, what if you bring in a coach who's got his own idea about general manager? Would you fire Trent Baalke? Well, we'd consider that. With Baalke right next to him on the split screen, we talked about it yesterday, a little awkward. So it shows a little bit of dysfunction. Our good buddy Rick Stroud in the Tampa Bay Times, he tweets out that Liam Cohen has not spoken to the Bucks since yesterday afternoon. They tried to reach him and have been unable. So instead of signing his contract, gets a raise with the Bucks, which is a formality, he secretly traveled to Jacksonville to meet with Jags owner Shad Khan. So it sounds like a power play from his agent saying, look, hey, let's get Baalke out of here, to your point, and then I'll go to work. But Lee, here's the thing, though. You could have had Ben Johnson, who's a much higher – no, with all due respect to Cohen, just 1 year as the OC.
Not enough.
With the Bucs. Yeah. He replaced Canales, who went to Carolina.
Sure, and you can say, yeah, look, he helped Baker have a great year, and he did. Canales also helped reinvent Baker Mayfield, and he did. But I'm with you.
Added Bucky Irving, who once they figured out to use him, was a pretty big piece.
The hottest guy. They had three rookies that really helped them this year on the offensive side. But after they figured out, or should have figured out, this was the move, you allowed Ben Johnson to not dictate the terms the way Liam Cohen has. And so now what we're telling you is he's in Jacksonville, and it looks like a deal's going to get done. And it looks like he may become the new head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars after maneuvering this. But again, he wasn't the only coach who they were interested in who said, I don't like the working conditions. And what they were telling you guys is, I don't like the general manager. I don't like the way he's done things. There's too much around the league about the way he operates. If we're going to move forward, we need a clean slate. And finally, Shad Khan, Khan was ready to do that.
Right.
And now you see an opening that may be taken by a guy who, again, I would have preferred Ben Johnson just off experience in the last 3 years, best scoring offense in the NFL. But I give Cohen a lot of credit here. This is a ballsy move.
Hey, man, speaking of ballsy moves, and again, I think this is just Jerry Jones just throwing stuff out there and keeping his name and the Cowboys in the news cycle.
Yeah.
We already heard it's odds-on favorite now. It's no longer Kellen Moore. It's Brian Schottenheimer, which is so uncompelling. You know what I mean? If ever there was, like, you couldn't get Dak to beat the Green Bay Packers, and you got humiliated, and they should have fired everybody, but they finally don't renew the contract. They don't pick up, McCarthy, so he walks. And now you're going to take his OC? If that's the case, that's just ridiculous. Then I saw something in Pro Football Talk earlier today that said Cowboys thinking of Rex. Well, first off, you got to find your coach. But would Brian Schottenheimer bring Rex Ryan in to be his defensive coordinator? Rex Ryan, who is basically saying why he should be and is going to be the Jets head coach.
He wants
on
to
ESPN.
Get in. He wants to get in bad. Obviously, I mean, look, is he interested in the Cowboys?
But
I know he's been
DC,
killing the Cowboys.
But as a DC. I mean, okay, but Schottenheimer, there's a relationship there.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. Schottenheimer, Carl and I were talking about it earlier. He's bounced around. I've never been impressed. Certainly no Georgia fan was impressed with 2015, but he was here for 1 year. But Schottenheimer's bounced around, and now he's been there those last 2 years. But as we said, we all know what the problem is. That's why Ben Johnson, if you didn't have Jerry Jones taking 30 minutes of press conference and 70 minutes of radio every week, you know, and maybe somebody else might want to come in and be the face of the franchise, but you'll never be. That's why they're going to have to settle for these ridiculous retreads as head coaches.
Yeah. Well, he, fundamentally, he just has never wanted a coach that was bigger than him. Even the Parcells situation.
Right. And even some. And you were working in Texas at the time. Everybody I've talked to said that Parcells is at that point like, yeah, whatever, Jerry. Just let Jerry say his piece. And Parcells is like literally stealing money at the end.
Well, and that was his attempt to basically say, I can go out and hire a brand name, right, and make it work.
Right.
It didn't because, again, he kept getting in the way. Either way, man, there's a lot going on around the NFL as far as these coaching hires and how this is going to play out. But, Mike, I think the most interesting thing, and look, if you're a coach, you have a right to do this. I just don't know if it's the right thing. The Buccaneers had multiple efforts to try to reach Cohen today. And to not pick up the phone, Mike, like to not say, hey, I got another interview in Jacksonville. I'm going to go back down there and see what they're talking about one more time. Like, that to me is a little shady, dude. I'm just saying, like, and especially when they were willing to make you the one of, if not the highest paid coordinators in the league, that's the part. The Buccaneers, again, had no contact with him today, and now it looks like he's going to a deal may be worked out down there in Jacksonville. Crazy.
Right. I mean, it's just one of those teams. Right now, close your eyes, not if you're driving. I think we might be on this list in other cities. If you ask the team, you just never see winning the Super Bowl.
Jacksonville.
Do you see the Cowboys getting back to the Super Bowl in our lifetime? I mean, they got some cap
30 years.
Some cap hurdles to clear, but that's it. Think about it. You and I have had this conversation before, though. Jerry's got the richest franchise in all of pro sports. You know, Jerry World, you've seen on Hard Knocks, was it a year or two ago? The Star facility in Frisco. He's got, I mean, it's a freaking, you know, like the Mall of Georgia built around your practice facility, and it's just, he's got all these things and all that money, and he can't win jack because he's the immovable object. He's the constant in the equation. Got to get out of there, which will never happen until he drops dead.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I'm not wishing that. I'm just giving you a fact.
He said that kind of like
now,
he did.
Years ago, we had Snoop Dogg on when Al Davis was still alive, and I was like, because Snoop's a big Raider fan, and I was joking around with Snoop. I said, man, I go, you know what? The best thing might be for somebody to push Al down a flight of stairs. And Snoop goes, oh, that's code.
It is.
But that would be effective.
It is. Either way, we'll see how things shake out. And as far as the Falcon front, guys, no news. There's nothing going on. We got our DC. We are going to be now focused on roster and evaluating and seeing where this goes with players. So that is where we're at. But I'm curious to see how some of these other jobs shake out. And by the way, Raiders job, obviously still open, right?
Right. And Brady apparently, you know, he's got his own idea. I'd be curious. That's the thing. It's almost like Brady. So you're going to be doing TV and you're going to figure out how to run Mark Davis's team?
I don't know about that.
Seems like a bit much.
Yeah, I don't know.
Brady saying that he's going to, in an interview we played earlier, talking about how he's going to definitely live out this contract 9 more years on that crazy $350 million Fox deal.
All right, one other thing I got to add, because this is just a soap opera now. So apparently Liam Cohen did reach out to Bucks head coach Todd Bowles, the ladies' man, to inform him of his interest in interviewing for the Jags job. That is because, I'm telling you, that's a bad look.
Yeah,
coaches need to be able to trust that, hey, man, we're about to take care of you.
He goes radio silence and hops jumps up the highway, goes up the Jags, a little jive.
That's a little less weak sauce. All right, man, we're going to come back. Sean Merriman's going to join us for a quick hit brought to you by our friends at Bet Online, and we'll talk to him about the AFC-NFC championship games, who he likes, why, Mahomes, does he get preferential treatment? If it does happen again this week, Mike, I don't know what the NFL does.
Hey, we gave you those stats earlier. In the playoffs, you got almost 3-1 penalties for the opposing team against the Chiefs, and the Chiefs are average or above average in penalties in the regular season.
Yeah, it makes no sense. All right, Sean Merriman's on the way. Stay right there. It is Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. A reminder, we are your home for the NFL playoffs. Join us for all of the action for the conference championship games this Sunday. And Sports Radio 92.9 The Game is your home of the NFL on Westwood One. And brought to you by the Greater Atlanta Area McDonald's. Enjoy steak on any breakfast favorite by Trajan Wealth, your local trusted fiduciary advisors. And by Prize Picks, Run Your Game, and Chattanooga Whiskey, guys, the Tennessee way. Hey, we're live at the training grounds out here for Atlanta United. Now, ironically, we're still here. Most of everybody has
ain't nobody training. They all went home.
Yeah, but we did have a great conversation with Brad Guzan earlier today, talking about, you know, this team and the players, Mike, and where it's going and how he feels about this. He's kind of the guy that's been through it all, right? He's been here through multiple manager changes and players coming and going. He's been the constant.
And we talked about how Kirk Cousins, especially if you sat by the bench this year, was like another coach on the field, another coach on the bench. That's what he is. And he, you know, he's that guy. He's that glue guy for this team. And as Jason Longshore told us, he sets the tone for the team. And he's, again, he's ready to roll. And I asked Jason off the air, I said, is Brad, you know, he still got it? He goes, yes. He says, Brad's playing the best soccer of his life, which is great, great news. Made some hella great saves down the stretch to get them in the playoffs. And then to beat Miami.
No doubt about it. We're going to be joined here in just a few minutes by Sean Merriman, guys, brought to you by Bet Online. Just want to have him jump on, talk a little bit about the championship games. Mike, where are you at when it comes to these games? We're going to get into them deeper tomorrow, guys, here on the show. But the early Philly in Philadelphia, obviously Commanders and Philly at 3, and then the late game is 6:30. I say late, there's only two. Kansas City's a 2-point favorite. Philly's a 6-point favorite. We'll give you our official picks tomorrow as well. But man, I just tell you what, is anybody going to be able to stop Saquon Barkley?
Great question. I mean, you feel that Jalen Hurts was back at practice. They're saying he was a full participant with that knee. That knee, the more I saw that today on NFL Network,
you don't trust it.
I got twisted 7 ways. He's going to be tender. You know, they get treatment that you and I don't. Well, you and I are going to sleep in a hyperbaric chamber and all the stuff that they do. But it did look like it was twisted in a way that's not going to feel great for another 10 days. But, hey, just limp it through, and then you'll have a few 2 weeks to get ready for the Super Bowl. I hate to say it, man. I just kind of feel it's like meet the new boss, same as the old boss. I think we're going to get the Chiefs and the Eagles. And I know one guy who don't want to see the Chiefs because he was a Charger for 5 years. And he had a great career, man. Pro Bowler 3 times, led the league in sacks. Good friend of the show. Sean Merriman joins us right now, Carl, on the WaitForIt.com hotline.
Sean, brother, it's good to have you back on. Yeah, we were just talking about Saquon Barkley, and I said, can anybody slow him down? I don't know if the Commanders can. What do you think?
Well, I don't think they're going to stop him. I think they can slow him down. And you can't let him get going early because he's a momentum guy. What, if you look at him on the sideline when he had these big runs, what does he do? He runs to the sideline. He's hopping up on the coaches, jumping around. He's motivating the defense. This guy, once he gets going, it is difficult to stop him. So you got to slow him down early, put some hits on him, and make somebody else beat you, man. You know automatically when Saquon Barkley gets going, then everything else opens up. That pass game, Jalen Hurts can use his legs a little bit more. That everything opens up and flowing when he's going, man. So you got to get some hits on him early on during the game.
I know that you know the Chargers play the Chiefs, and I don't know about you, man. I figured I know the answer because you played in that division. I'm done with the Chiefs. No disrespect. I'm sick of the refs. And we looked at the stats earlier. Yeah. It's not like we're just making it up, Sean. I mean, it's like the refs kind of judge and officiate a game a certain way. Do you think there's a fatigue around the league and around the country to see some fresh blood?
I think, look, as a player, you're always told to take the refs out the game, right? You got to win. Don't put it in their hands to make or break a game as a player. You never want to say, hey, we lost. We won this game because of the refs. But it's getting oblivious. Like, it's getting so obvious now when you look at these games of what they're doing. Anytime you got commentators, especially somebody like Troy Aikman who played quarterback and saying, guys, this has gone too far, then you know it's gone too far because a lot of the broadcasters, they really try to stay away from criticizing the refs too much and doing that. They most try to stay away from that. But it's getting so obvious now that it's hard to turn your cheek and look the other way. And I'm not really so concerned about the refs calling the plays. Well, I'm more concerned that when you watch this Chiefs team and Patrick Mahomes and some of the stuff they're doing, you know, he's looking back, looking for a flag now almost every single play, every time he gets hit. That part, it bothers me. And as a former defensive player, it will really get under my skin. Because when you watch the film, you're like, dude, you didn't go out of bounds. You stopped 2 yards before you went out of bounds. You got pushed. You turn around looking for a flag. right? Those things don't make sense. And Patrick Mahomes is too great of a player to be labeled as that. You don't want people, you know, when I say people, the players, the fans, the opponents, to look at this guy as a crybaby. And I think that he's teetering on down that line where he's going to get labeled as that pretty soon, because it's already bad enough with the refs. I mean, the refs, you're trying to make the calls and things like that, so that's already bad enough. You don't want that stamp as a player saying this guy's looking for a call, a penalty. He's always going to the refs complaining. And it's him. Get down when you're supposed to get down. Don't try to go get an extra 2 yards. If you want to get out of bounds, get out of bounds. Don't stop and get mad when guys push you out. So I hope that he looks at himself and looks at this, because he's too great of a player to have this dark cloud over him in that manner.
Sean Merriman joining us here on Dukes and Bell. Sean, I want to ask you about the quarterback on the other side in that Eagles game, and that's Jaden Daniels. Mm. Kid is special, man. He already threw for 5 touchdowns in the last time that they met and beat them. Now, we know Hurts got concussed, but the way he's playing right now, I got to, you know, they got more than a puncher's chance to win this game.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, man, anybody that said that they thought they were going to beat, other than the hardcore Commanders fans and people that have been on their side in their corner the whole entire season, no one else thought they were going to beat the Lions, period. Mm-hmm. And they came out there and they shocked a lot of people. I included. I didn't think that they were going to. I thought they had a chance to win. I didn't think they were going to win the way they did, right, in kind of a dominant fashion, especially towards the end of the game. And also, too, man, when you're talking about a young quarterback, as a defender, the first thing you're telling everyone to do is let's rattle him, let's confuse him, let's hit him, let's get him off the spot, let's make him do some things that's uncharacteristic. Guess what? Everybody has done that to this kid already. Everybody. He's been hit in the face. He's been bleeding. He's been, you know, hit after the play. And you look at him in third and long situations, and when the game is on the line, look at him on the sideline. He doesn't flinch. There's not like one single moment where you feel like he's scared of that moment. He's scared to be in that situation. He stands up and rises every single occasion. I don't think we've seen anything like this. And the closest thing that I can really even relate to of a rookie coming in this ready is maybe Andrew Luck, right? When I played against him and played, you know, kind of seen him. But Andrew Luck wasn't at this level at all. But as far as a rookie coming in, you know, he had that same kind of demeanor where he couldn't confuse him. He wasn't scared. And he was ready to play, man. But Jaden Daniels, I don't think we've seen anything like this.
It is lights out. Sean Merriman with us, guys. Defensive Rookie of the Year in the NFL back in 2005. Joins us here on Dukes and Bell. The Bills, man, I thought they were going to take a step back when they lost some pieces. But, man, even with a cast of, like, you know, nobodies and Keon Coleman and not exactly an elite wide receiver core, man, they are just kicking butt. You believe that Josh Allen, can they get it done this time in Kansas City, even though they've had, actually, you could argue, more talented teams come up short against the Chiefs?
Yeah, and I said this before the season. I think it's just the Bills' time to get over the hump. And when you've been here enough, like a guy like Josh Allen, you've been here enough, you know what's on the line. And you can echo that through the locker room and let these young guys who haven't been in this situation before, let them know how important it is, right? And I'm speaking from experience. When we went to the playoffs and championship games and things like that, we were all very young. And we were very talented. We were a very good team. But I don't think everybody understood the magnitude of being in that moment. Hey, you lose, you're going home, you're getting ready for next year, right? Every snap count, every penalty, 12 people on the field, and, you know, lining up off sides, you just think self-inflicting wounds. All these can crush you, especially against a team like the Chiefs, who capitalize off of every mistake that you make. That's what makes these guys so great. I don't think, to be honest, I don't think the Chiefs do anything special. I mean, they got special players with Chris Jones and obviously Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes. They got a great coach, Andy Reid. But if you look at this team, where are they dominant at? They're not dominant on the offensive side of the ball. They're not dominant on the defense side of the ball. They just know how to win football games and capitalize off of everyone's mistakes. But Josh Allen is playing out of his mind right now. He's playing at such a high level, spreading the ball around everybody on offense, and you really can't game plan these guys. There's no Stephon Diggs now to take off the map. Hey, if we stop this guy, we got a shot. He's throwing the ball to guys like Ty Johnson who in the back of the end zone. You know, he's you can't game plan, you know, guys that's like this. It's no one thing that they do great because they do a lot of things great. And so that's why I like the Bills in this.
Sean Merriman, it's always a pleasure, man, to talk with you, chop it up a little bit. and pick your brain on these games.
Hey, before we cut you loose, Sean, just real quick, you are an elite edge rusher. You got after it. We have not had that on this Falcons team for years. It happens like once every other decade. Is there just a want to in being an elite edge rusher? Because we can't find one, and we're looking forward to this year's draft. It just seems like, is there a mindset? Did you get coached up, or how, I mean, what happens? What do you need to get one of those guys on this team?
Yeah, for one, you gotta have that tenacity, man. Everything starts on a pass rusher to be able to want to go out and make these plays. And it is truthfully one of the toughest positions on the field, because not only you ask these guys to pass rush nowadays, they may have a cover a tight end down the seam, or they may have to run with a guy out or run it back out the backfield. So you got to do a couple things. But most importantly, man, you got to get some of these guys that are just relentless and want to get to the football. And, you know, I used to go to Atlanta during the off seasons, and, you know, I used to train with Chuck Smith out there. I used to go and spend a week or two at a time during the off season with Chuck Smith and just work on my craft, man. I wanted to be as nasty and as violent as possible coming off of that edge. And get a chance to work with guys like Chuck Smith, man, just really helped me take my game to the next level. So it's coming. I think there's some guys in draft, man, that you guys can have coming up. But you are a pass rusher away. You got a quarterback. You're a pass rusher away to getting those couple extra turnovers to put it back in the quarterback's hands.
Sean, thanks so much, man. Great stuff. We'll talk to you soon, brother.
Thanks. Make sure you guys download Lights Out Sports TV. I got the East-West Shrine Bowl practices on my network. Lights Out Sports TV is completely free. Every smart TV, you can download it on every smart TV, iOS, Android. But we got exclusive practice coverage this Saturday starting at 8:30 a.m. Central. So we got Shador Sanders will be there, Cam Ward, and Primetime Sanders, Deanna will be there. A lot of big-name guys. It's their biggest confirmed list they've ever had there. So make sure you guys download Lights Out Sports TV this Saturday live.
Awesome. Sean, we're on it, brother. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, guys, we need to make way, get out of the way here. We got a Hawks game coming up tonight. It's Hawks-Toronto, and then they'll play again on Saturday. Big O, man, let's clear our throat. Tomorrow we'll talk to BMAC guys, Bryant McFadden, about these AFC-NFC championship games. Joel Corey's going to stop by, Capologist, to kind of break down where we are at in the Kirk Cousins situation. Mm-hmm. Steve Coonan and much more tomorrow here on the show. Make sure you're here at 2 o'clock. Thanks to the folks here in Atlanta United. They always treat us great. We enjoyed it, and we had a great time talking to our new manager, Brad Guzan, as well. All right. Hawks basketball's on the way. Big O, great job back at the studio. Chris, get better. He was out sick today. Mike Bell, we got to get out of the way, man. Clear your throat.
Hey, man. Talked about it earlier. Jurickson Profar coming off a career year. 280 with a bunch of home runs for the Padres. Can he do likewise? Could this be another Chris Sale 2.0? Now, Chris Sale was obviously a reclamation project after the injury. This is a guy that was a late bloomer after being all that as a rookie, supposedly, right, when he was drafted.
Yeah.
Maybe he can be a star for us because, man, if Acuña can hit the ground running and those dudes hit like they did before they got hurt, you're starting to feel better about the Braves. Still, Carl, pitching's a concern. Can Alex find some more pitching, especially that pen?
Guys, I'm concerned about Bogey. Last night, he didn't knock down any shots, and he hasn't knocked down any shots over his last three games. 0-for-9 from the field, and he's missed 14 shots over three-plus games.
Damn!
We talk about being a liability. 4-for-29 from three-point range, and that's his specialty. In his last five games, he's shooting a career-low 30%. Something's got to give. Bogey, you better get hot. Or I think you might be on your way out.
Ooh.
Hey, if you love the show,
tell your friends.
If you don't.
Now Carl Dukes will try to run you out of town like me.